You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up on Total Access, The Locker Room.
He said, okay, maybe you're going to make it up in the signing bonus. Mm-hmm. I said, so what's the signing bonus? He said, $150.
What?
150.
What can you buy
this
with
man
that,
had
man?
A nerve to tell me all our worth is $150.
Welcome to NFL Total Access, The Locker Room. I'm Michael Robinson. I'm not joined by Coach Brian Billick this week, but we're usually here to let you guys in on what players and coaches really talk about inside the locker room. Today, we're talking to a Hall of Fame receiver, Drew Pearson, all about America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. You don't want to miss what he has to say about Dak Prescott. Let's get it. Let's welcome in again the Hall of Famer, the original 88 for the Dallas Cowboys, Hall of Famer, Drew Pearson. Big Drew, what's going on, big fella?
No, I'm just hanging, man. Hanging, enjoying life. 70 years old and still kicking. Hood, hood.
Yeah, there it is, man. You like you can still get out there and play right now. But, of course, we do a locker room story every single time we have a guest on. Let's hear this week's locker room story.
Yeah, we had a fullback on our team named Walt Garrison. You know, he's a Bronco buster. You know, he's a rodeo guy. He used to roping calf and all that.
Yeah.
He's a real tough guy. So, you know, back in the day, fullback was a really important position. Now it's kind of almost extinct in a lot of offenses you see out there, which to me is a shame. You know, bring it back, you'll see more success running the football in the NFL if you did that. You know, but Walt Garrison was the kind of fullback just leading the running back into the hole. That was pretty much his job. He never hardly carried the football, but he blocked a lot. And in doing that, you're blocking linebackers, sometimes defensive ends. And, you know, back in the day, it was all about sticking your head in there, okay? Yep. Blocking, tackling, everything was stick your head in there, stick your head in there.
You know, hear that
pop. I didn't play no defense, Rob. I wasn't sticking my head in nowhere. I'd rather try to deal with a hit, but I'm sticking my head in nowhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, Walt, you know, played this one game, and he got knocked out during the game, finished the whole game. And one thing about when a player is knocked out, he doesn't know, you don't know, because he's still doing the things like he normally does.
Yeah.
But he comes, wakes up on the sideline, they give him that pneumonia snap, you know, and it wakes you up. All you are is a wide awake concussed person now. Oh, wow. You know? You know, just like they gave coffee to a drunk, you're just a wide awake drunk, you know?
Yeah.
So that's all that is. But anyway, next day he goes to the locker room and I know he's hurting, okay? I had my locker right next to him. I know he's hurting. But anyway, we get no treatment. So he goes to the training room. I'm finishing up my deal. I'm in the sauna trying to get the soreness out of me. And I'm finished. I shower up. I go into the training room there. You know, we had two hot tubs, okay, in the corner. In one hot tub, I noticed like a pipe, something sticking out from the water.
Uh-huh.
So I go over there and I look into the hot tub to see what it was. And all of a sudden, Walt Garrison comes flying out of there. He was submerged in the water. And the thing is that I thought was a pipe was a snorkel, okay?
He was breathing.
He had a face mask on. He was dipped in the water, submerged in the hot tub, okay, with the snorkel coming up so he could breathe. And this was his treatment to deal with his head concussion that he got the last game.
What's the thought process behind that?
Well, how many fingers I got up, or you know, giving the eye test or any kind of thing. He had to do it on his own. And the best way he felt, the best way he felt to deal with that was to submerge himself. You know, like you get any kind of other injury, you go to the hot tub, you know, you stick it in there. Well, he thought the best way to deal with his head injury was to submerge himself into that hot tub, kind of
put my head in there,
and then he popped out.
Popped out and scared you, man.
And he scared everybody. You know, you can't scare the brother like that. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
We're a little shaky. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, right? All right. So look, check this out, Drew. So you signed as an undrafted free agent to out of Tulsa to the Dallas Cowboys, right? To America's team.
Yeah.
Take our listeners back to what it was like when you first walked in that door and was like, okay, I'm in pro football, and this is the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, yeah, Rob, it's a big deal for me. You know, disappointed not getting drafted. You know, that's back when you had 17 rounds of the draft, 450-some players,
damn,
and no one drafted
rounds?
Drew Pearson. Now, I'm almost over that. I'm not as bitter as I used to be about that. You can't dwell on that negative, Rob. You got to move on.
Yeah, got to move on, brother.
But as an undrafted free agent, I had a chance to sign with the Green Bay Packers, the Pittsburgh Steelers, or the Dallas Cowboys. And I didn't sign with Green Bay because, you know, it's too cold up there for this brother.
Yeah. We ain't ready for that. Yeah.
I was a Packer fan growing up. Not so much a fan, but a fan of a lot of players from back in the day. And then I didn't sign with the Steelers because I let Lynn Swann wear number 88 and have a career.
Oh, you let him have that. Yeah.
Yeah. You got that, Lynn. He took it and ran with it too, didn't he? But anyway, I signed with the Cowboys. And the reason is, number one, was Tom Landry. And the number two is they had a history of free agents making their roster. Cliff Harris, who's going into the Hall of Fame. Cornell Green, who was a basketball player. You know, so many guys that they brought in that, you know, once you got to camp, it didn't matter where your number one draft pick or a free agent, everybody got the equal opportunity look. And so, you know, just coming to the Cowboys, when they signed me, Rob, it was the second day of the draft. I'm in my Tulsa apartment. I was married at the time, and I was disappointed. I'm drowning my sorrows in Boone's Farm.
Yep.
You know what Boone's Farm is? You're kind of young. You might not know what that is.
I know what it is. I'm from the South, man. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Right on. Well, strawberry was my favorite, so I'm drinking all the strawberry. And my phone rings late that night, and it's from the Cowboys, and it's a scout. Bob Griffin, God rest his soul. Mm-hmm. He's in Tulsa. He wants to sign me right now. But so, you know, disappointment of not getting drafted and somebody's here to sign right now, I'm on my way.
I'm going to sign.
So I said, hey, sir, you got to give me about 30, 45 minutes because I had to kind of sober up a little, you know.
You won't be smelling like that. Yeah.
You know, brush my teeth to get that breath, you know, right, and all that. So I went down there and he wanted to sign me right then and there. He said, we couldn't believe you didn't get drafted. We think you could play in the NFL. We want to give you a shot. And so I said, okay, let's sign. So he said, we're offering you a contract. I said, okay, what's that? He said, the base salary, $14,500. And I said, that's the signing bonus? Or is that per game? He said, no, that's your base salary. And he said, okay, maybe you're going to make it up in the signing bonus. Mm-hmm. I said, so what's the signing bonus? He said, $150. Dollars.
What?
150.
What can you buy?
This man had a nerve to tell me all I'm worth is $150.
Well, that's all the money they had, probably, for you. A lot of
people. No. They had more. They just working me. Okay.
Okay.
And they knew I'm desperate. Okay. Mm-hmm. So here's what I told that scout, Rob. I said, you pay me that signing bonus in cash, I'll sign right now. Okay.
Really?
He took out 7 20s and a 10, and he laid it out on the table, and I counted it, and that's how I got my signing bonus.
No.
For Dallas. I didn't even get a check back to frame, you know, take a picture of.
He gave you the money out the back of his pocket?
Yeah, and we didn't have ATMs back then. You know, he had to be prepared.
He had to be ready.
Take this money.
Yeah.
Brother, he probably had $200.
Yeah.
You know, if he holds out, I can go to 200.
Okay? Yeah, you can go to 200. Wow.
So you know what, Rob? He asked me, he said, why do you want the money in cash? I said, because I need gas money to get back to the college apartment.
So hold up, man. He was there in Tulsa signed you on the spot and paid you your signing bonus out of the back of his pocket.
Out of the back of his pocket in cash, 720s and a 10. And Rob, don't tell anybody, but I still haven't reported it, okay?
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Yo, so Drew, you mentioned earlier one of the reasons you signed with the Dallas Cowboys was Coach Landry.
Yes.
Talk about why. You know, why Coach Landry? What was so special about the man walking in that building every single day and having the experience with Coach Landry?
Well, the big reason, Rob, is because I needed that. I needed that type of discipline in football. You know, I had that in high school. Okay. I come from South River High School in New Jersey, and it was a big deal to play for football for South River High School. It was a tradition. I am not the first Hall of Famer to come out of South River High School in South River, New Jersey. There's a guy named Alex Wojahovitz. Okay. He was number 50. He was number one draft pick by the Detroit Lions. You know what he was drafted as?
What's
a
that?
Center on offense and a nose guard on defense.
What?
He played at Fordham University with Vince Lombardi, one of the seven blocks of granite. And he was inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1968. So I'm not even one of the first from my high school into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But that's a tradition of South River High School. So, and then also my quarterback in high school for one season was Joe Theismann.
Okay? Joe Theismann was your – oh, man.
Yeah, he played he was a senior when I was a sophomore. And I started on the varsity at receiver and safety on defense. And that was big for a sophomore to start for South River High School. Right. So I would play the varsity game at receiver and safety on defense on Saturday afternoon, 2 p.m. kickoff, and then play the whole game. And we were good. We were undefeated. Uh-huh. We were 9-0, unscored upon for six games. We only played nine, had no playoffs back then. Joey was a bad man.
He
was a bad high school quarterback. And guess what? He'd be the first to tell you how good he was.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know, Joey. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. So anyway, so I would play that varsity game on Saturday afternoon. And then Monday, I would play the JV game at quarterback to groom to replace Joey. I was playing two games a week back
then.
They
allowed you to do that?
Oh, yeah, there was no question.
Yeah, they would call the police on us now if we did that.
Well, allowed, you better do it. They tell you.
Wow,
so you better do it. That's how it was. But anyway, the tradition of South River is there, and that carried us through. But then I go to Tulsa, and it was a tough decision. I chose it over Nebraska. I was a quarterback. They wanted me to play quarterback and all that. And I chose Tulsa because I wanted to play more. I was a baseball player.
Okay.
And I wanted to play baseball, and Tulsa had a great, great baseball program. Going to College World Series every year, players getting drafted and all that kind of stuff. But, man, the 3 years, 4 years at Tulsa, I had three head coaches, three losing seasons, and 3 years of probation. So I'm in that negative environment. I couldn't prosper. So I wanted discipline, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what we had at South River. It was nothing about – everything was about discipline. You know, being part of the team and all that and having success because of that. And so I wanted to go into that kind of environment. And I knew Coach Landry was like that. I know his environment was like that. And it certainly was more than I ever expected it to be because he was very much a disciplinarian. But, you know, Rob, that's what I want in football. I don't want a coach to be my buddy. I want a coach up here and me here. OK, yeah. I don't necessarily need to see eye to eye with him. I trust him. Okay. Mm-hmm. I trust that he's going to put me in the right position to be successful as a pro football player. And Coach Landry looked, he didn't care if I wasn't a number one draft pick or a free agent. You know, he looked for players that had character. He looked for players that were intelligent. He looked for players that were passionate, that loved the game. And he looked, then talent was the last thing he really looked for. If you had some talent, which I did have, I could catch the ball. You know, I wasn't fast. I ran a 4.640. I was only 165, 170 pounds. You know, I never lifted any weights till I got to the pros. But I could catch the football. So I had some talent. And so, you know, because of all those other things I had and in that system, you know, I was able to prosper. And, you know, if you understood what was going on, what Coach Landry was trying to implement, the discipline and the way he was handling things, And the thing is, the cool thing, Rob, is not he only was not trying to prepare us for each and every football game or to be a good football player. He was also trying to prepare us for life after football.
Life.
You know, everything was done in a business-like atmosphere. And if you're smart enough, you know, I mean, how many times can you sit in a meeting for 11 seasons and go over X's and O's and pick up new things? You know just as much as anybody else by that time. But what I did on those 11 years and then 1 year as a coach on Landry's staff is that, you know, I watched and observed how they did business. You know, why were they successful? Starting from an expansion franchise, going through those years of losing, coming out of it, winning their first Super Bowl in the 70s, you know, and then, you know, making it America's team and all that kind of stuff. And this is what I wanted to learn because, you know, you had to prepare for life after football, you know, back then. You know, I started at 14-5, but finished at 22-5, 11 years later, you know.
That's so, it. You know, you went from 14 to 22. Yeah.
So anyway, you had to prepare for life after football. And a lot of the things Coach Landry was instilling in us was to help us prepare for life after football. When I got out of the game, I owned a company, Drew Pearson Marketing, for 23 years. I sold NFL licensed headwear for 9 seasons. A black owned company, Drew Pearson Marketing. I paid the NFL more money, over $9 million as a licensee doing business, selling headwear, baseball caps, you know, for 9 seasons. And I paid them a lot more money than they paid me to play that game for 11 seasons, including that little per diem money they used to give up.
Wow. You know?
But that's what I did when I retired. Roger Staubach, he's regarded as one of the richest, if not the richest, athlete that ever played pro football. He got in the real estate business. He would leave practice and go to real estate meetings after practice. Wow. You know, Leroy Jordan, he owned the lumber company that's still thriving today. Chuck Halley, uniform business, work uniforms, it's still thriving today. You know, so all of us got into a business climate once we got out of the game. And a lot of the acumen we learned from being around Coach Landry and the Cowboys. When we went to games, Rob, we wore suit and ties. Okay, we were pinned up. We carried briefcases. We were studying the computer printout, tendencies, analytical data way back in the early 70s.
What?
You know, that's what we were using to study the tendencies of our opponent. We were breaking down every little thing they were doing, every down and distance. And the computer printouts back then, you know, can you see my hands?
Yeah, I can see. Yeah.
You know, they were huge. And you had to lug that thing around. And then in the briefcase, you had your playbook. You had to carry that thing around. But you always had to have that suit and tie on. And Coach Landry wasn't doing that just to mess with you. He was doing that to try to prepare you after football. So now after I retire, I go to my first business meeting. I ain't got no problem putting a tie on. I know how to put a tie on, dressed to go to a meeting and present myself that way. So that was the thing about being around Coach Landry. And it was just a tremendous experience. And I don't think I would have been the player that I turned out to be if it wasn't for, well, two things. Him, number one, and the rest of the coaching staff. And number two, with those players I played with. You know, I played with some Hall of Famers, man. you're playing with these guys. These guys are really pros. You know, I learned how to be a good football player hanging around those guys too. But I also learned how to be a pro, how they approach the game, you know, how they prepared themselves, you know, how they study. Somebody was always taking, you know, we didn't have the iPads and stuff like they have now. Yeah. We have to take cans of film home to study it.
Cans
put it
of
in
film.
That projector and go round and round and stuff like that. But we did it, you know? And so you learn things how to be a pro off the field and how to carry yourself as a professional being around some of the guys I was around.
Drew, your description of Tom Landry sounds just like a coach I played for in Joe Paterno with the Penn State Nittany Lions. Old school, all about discipline. About discipline, right? As you look around, right, a lot of teams consider your team their rival. You talk about the Eagles. They look at the Cowboys as a rival, the Giants, Washington, the Steelers in the 70s. In your opinion, who was the biggest rivalry that you got amped up for, that you really was like, okay, it's time to give them the real Drew Pearson this game?
Well, Rob, my thing was anybody on the East Coast. Okay, I'm from New Jersey. I grew up a Giant and a Jet fan. I couldn't stand the Dallas Cowboys, okay?
What?
I was all about the Giants. I won a punt, pass, and kick contest about 12 years old. And the thing I won, Rob, was a New York Giant helmet.
Okay? Really?
And I sleep in that helmet. Oh, man, I'm loving it. Oh, man. But anyway, I was a Giant and Jet fan. So anytime we played in Philly, Washington, or in New Jersey, I was ready for that. And Coach Landry knew that, you know? Uh-huh. He knew that I'm going to be a little more hyped up, a little more ready. And so I used to get my number called a lot more in those situations when we played those teams, especially when we went on the road to play them, you know, in their stadium.
At their stadium.
But you know what? It was easy to get up for those games, right? You know, some games are naturally you get up for because of the competitiveness in those games that come along with that.
Absolutely.
And then when you're playing within your division, you're playing teams twice a year, you know, twice a season. And then you do that for 11 years, you know, it ain't like the league now where it's transient players moving all over the place.
Yeah.
Sometimes in an 11-year career, you playing against the same defensive back, you know, for 11 straight seasons. You know, there was no moving back in the day.
Yeah.
You got traded back in the day, you were damaged good. Something was wrong with you.
It was
movement back then. But anything on the East Coast, I had some of my best games in Giant Stadium. I caught the first touchdown pass in Giant Stadium. In 1976, a post pattern the east corner of the end zone. I had about 300 South River, New Jersey fans up in the stands, section 360, and it was live, man. And then playing in Philadelphia in the Vet, you know how those Eagle fans just hated us. And then you go down to D.C. and RFK. That old stadium, you know, you think you're playing on green grass? No, it's dirt. It's green dirt, Holmes. You know? There was no grass.
That old stadium won't like that.
Got all that going on? Oh, so intimidating. But those kind of games and those kind of atmospheres get you up naturally for the game. So you're very competitive in those situations.
But I'm going to fast forward a little bit to some of the current Dallas Cowboys, okay? And I'm just going to ask you flat out about Jerry Jones. I know Jerry brought the team a little bit later after you had left, but what's Jerry Jones like when the camera's off, man? Because the dude has bravado, you know what I'm saying? I think he is so gangster. I love it, man. You know what I mean? Straight business, man. But what's he like with the cameras off?
I don't think he's any different. With Jerry Jones, what you see is what you get. And he ain't trying to impress nobody. You know, he's just going to be Jerry Jones. You like it or you don't like it. There's really no middle road. You know, it's like the Cowboys. You love them or you hate them. There ain't nobody in the middle. You know, Jerry Jones the same way. But I got tremendous, tremendous respect for him, you know, for what he did, how he got into the league, what he laid on the line to get in the league. You know, he laid every penny. He maxed out every credit card, everything he owned. He liquidated, you know, to get enough money to buy the Dallas Cowboys. And his dad told him, you know, he says, son, if you're going to do this, you better not fail. You better not fail because these are the Dallas Cowboys.
There you go.
And you better not fail. And so, you know, it was a lot of pressure on him. And he came in green, not knowing much about the NFL game, but he learned it. You know how he learned it? He worked his butt off. That man worked. See, was he 78, 79 years old? I bet you find him right now in the office. You know, that man is always working. And then he brings his family into the business. And they learn it from the ground up. Charlotte, you know, she probably might be the first woman in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The things she's doing on some of these committees she's on. And then Stephen Jones, he's the heir apparent to Jerry. He's making all the business decisions right now, you know. Yep. He's pretty much running the team, and Jerry's still there, you know, as the influencer. But, you know, for him to do it the way he's done it, you know, I just admire that, you know. Yeah. So I got a lot of respect for him. And here's the deal as far as not winning and having a success after the 90s when he did have that success. You know, he's tried, okay. I don't think it's his fault. You know, he tried to get the best players. He tried to pay the players when they deserved the money the players felt like they deserved the money. But so many cases, Rob, when he gave those players the money, you know, they didn't live up to it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like saying, now I'm not satisfied with one of these contracts. I'm going to want another one in 3 or 4 years just like that or even more money.
What do you think
a lot
about
of times these players get that money, they get complacent, they get all the luxuries they deal with nowadays and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they forget what's important. And so anyway,
What do you think? What do you think about Dak's deal? Dak Prescott's deal?
Oh, yeah. I like it because that's the value. Yep. And I just hate it that they did Dak like they did and make him wait as long as they did. In the meantime, they're giving Zeke the money. They're giving Jalen Smith the money. They're giving Zach Martin the money. They're giving Tyron Smith the money. They're giving everybody else the money. But what about the quarterback?
That's true.
And Dak, you know, everybody criticizes him. But I, you know, back in the day, I used to work for when Dak was a senior. I worked for the local TV station doing cowboy reports and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I had predicted to my co-host there, Newey Scruggs, I said, the Cowboys needed that draft Dak Prescott.
And no,
what I saw
really?
At Mississippi State, I saw a winner, okay?
Uh-huh.
Mississippi State wasn't nothing before Dak Prescott got there, okay? I maybe had some guy named, I don't know, John David Crow back in the day. I don't know. There was some guy from way back in the day. But Mississippi State hadn't run nothing in the SEC before Dak got there. But when Dak was there, you know, they rose to number one in the country. They beat Alabama, okay? So Dak leaves. What happened to Mississippi State? They haven't won anything since.
Yeah.
So what I saw in Dak was a winner. And the way he approached the game and his own personal story and things like that that motivated him, his mom being sick and all that kind of stuff. I said, I hope the Dallas Cowboys draft Dak Prescott. And I couldn't believe that he was available in the fourth round. And the Cowboys did draft him. And ever since he put Tony Romo out of the game, okay?
Yeah, let's be honest. Yeah.
Jerry Jones loved him some Tony Romo. He still loves him some Tony Romo. He just gave Tony Romo money for the hell of it. Okay?
Yeah. You know? Just cause.
He's like a son. Here, take some money.
Just take some money, man. I'm sorry, man.
You know? But he put, you know, Tony had that injury, but they didn't even force Tony to come back and want him to come back. Because they had their quarterback for the future in Dak Prescott, and he didn't let him down. All he needed was people around him. So I'm glad they took care of Dak, and Dak can throw to me anytime. You know, I don't say that about many quarterbacks, but Dak Prescott, well, he could throw some of that money my way too. But.
Me too.
Well, look, but he could throw me that ball anytime he wants. I'm a believer in Dak Prescott.
Last question before I let you go, okay? Mike McCarthy is the new head coach. You know, it was a COVID year for him, so I don't necessarily say this 2020 season is on Mike McCarthy, on Coach McCarthy. Do you think Coach McCarthy's system and him being with the Dallas Cowboys, do you think he can kind of renew that winning tradition to back to when, you know, the days that you were playing? Do you think they got the right system in place right now?
Yeah, and I think we got the right coach to do that. You know, I hope we do. And, you know, I believe that we do. You know, he's a successful coach, has been successful in the NFL, knows what he's doing. This was a tough year coming in with COVID and all that stuff going on. And you can't get in front of the players. And, you know, even your coaching staff, all that was changed over. You know, we switched our defense and the players had to learn a new defense, you know, with Mike Nolan coming in and trying to implement his philosophies and stuff like that. And I don't know if he was the best fit for the players that we had. Not only that, but I don't know if he was the best fit for Mike McCarthy, you know, where Mike McCarthy can trust him to do what he needed to do. So maybe Mike McCarthy was filtering, taking some time away from the offense and filtering into the defense, and that, you know, caused the offense to suffer a little bit. But now they bring in Dan Quinn, you know, from the Atlanta Falcons. And, you know, he's a Seattle guy. So, you know, Legion of Boom and Doom and whatever that is up there, y'all knocking people out, you know, back in the day. But, you know, they bring him in. So hopefully he'll bring a different style. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, a philosophy that meets the talent that we have. You know, we had more of a four man line talent, a four front. And then, you know, Nolan was trying to be a three front and all that type of stuff. And players were confused back there and they weren't reacting on defense. You got to learn to know your stuff so well that you don't have to think. You react, because if you're thinking, I'm gone, you know, touchdown right behind you. So anyway, I think they made some good moves on the defensive side as far as bringing in a new system, something that meets what the players bring. And then on the offensive side, it's just a matter of healing up, healing up Dak, healing up Tyron Smith, healing up Zach Martin. You know, look at our receivers, Amari Cooper, you know, Gallup, number 88.
CeeDee Lamb. 88. Yeah.
Zeke had an off year. I got a feeling Zeke going to have a chip on his shoulder wanting to redeem himself for the year he had. You know, so I think the motivation is there. It's just a matter of players understanding that the coach gives you the game plan. Just go out and execute.
Execute it.
It's your job to tackle, to block, to run, to pass, to catch, and do all those things. I don't care if you like the game. You think I like Coach Landry's game plan every week? Hell no. I'm in the back cussing him. Oh, my God. You see this stuff? But I can't believe we're running this stuff. But we didn't like it, but what do? We went out and executed it. We did what we had to do because that's our job. Our job is not to criticize that. So hopefully these guys understand that, and Dak will be the man this year, and he'll come back and be better than he's ever was before he got hurt.
Drew, I cannot thank you enough for stopping by, man. You are truly a gem. All right. You are a gem. You are so important to our football story. Talking about the National Football League. I'm so happy you got in the Hall of Fame, man. Thank you, man. Thank you for coming by. You can come by this show anytime you want.
Right on, man.
Anytime you want. And that'll do it for this week's show, this week's episode of Total Access to Locker Room. For more insight with the Locker Room point of view, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.